From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
This is Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. We are podcasting today from the shuttered headquarters of the Postal Regulatory Commission. The Postal Regulatory Commission, as is one quarter of the federal government, collateral damage in the ongoing political feud over President Trump's proposed wall between the United States and Mexico. I am joined today by the chairman of the Postal Regulatory Commission, Robert Taub. Robert Taub is in his second term on the commission, having originally been nominated by President Obama and designated chairman by President Trump. The Postal Regulatory Commission is an independent agency of the federal government, tasked with promoting universal service, ensuring postal transparency and accountability, and compliance with the law. Before we talk about how the Postal Regulatory Commission's shutdown impacts postal operations, can you briefly explain why the Postal Regulatory Commission is closed down despite being funded by ratepayers, Robert?
Well, the simple answer is we have run out of money. Up until 2006 law, the Postal Accountability Enhancement Act, the old Postal Rate Commission used to get its budget directly from the Postal Service. The 2006 law, as part of changing us into the Postal Regulatory Commission, questioned the idea of why is the regulator going to the operator to get its budget, and hence we were put into the annual appropriation process like other federal agencies. So once we have exhausted our appropriations like other agencies, we don't have the authorization or money to continue operating. The Postal Service, on the other hand, has a permanent appropriation. So all the money that they raise from the services they provide, the stamps they sell, is permanently appropriated to them, so they can continue to operate regardless of whether there's a shutdown, because there's not a single year appropriation to the Postal Service, unlike us.
So the difference between you and the Postal Service, even though that the source of your funds is identical, the ratepayers, is that since Congress has its hands on the money that goes to the Postal Regulatory Commission through the appropriations process, you're sort of, held hostage to budget negotiations.
Well, our appropriation, like other agencies, unless we've gotten it, we can't spend it. The one difference is Comptroller General of the United States, the head of the Government Accountability Office, did opine that, unlike a lot of other federal agencies, because our appropriation comes out of the Postal Service Fund, we don't have to return any unused money at the end of each fiscal year. So we are allowed to carry over funds, which in fact allowed us to remain open an extra 3 weeks from December 22nd until January 11th. Past the original shutdown date for a lot of our other brothers and sisters and other federal agencies who had a shutdown. So our flexibility to have carryover funds did allow us extra time to operate, but once we exhausted those carryover funds in the absence of appropriations, like others who are shut down, we had to suspend operations.
Interesting thing is that the Postal Regulatory Commission, among other things, has an appropriation of, I think, around a little over $15 million, which is less than they were appropriated, probably, I think, in FY 2017, and it's appropriated out of a $70 billion budget of the United States Postal Service, so it's not really as a percentage of the total postal revenue-generated budget. You're not that. The Postal Regulatory Commission is sort of not a major component of that budget.
Yeah, we would argue we're providing the American public and the American ratepayers a lot of bang for the buck that Congress is appropriating. As you indicate, maybe it's like a little bit of a David and Goliath, but we're a small agency, roughly 75 folks who are regulating a $70 billion enterprise.
Now, there were 75 employees of the Postal Regulatory Commission. How many are on furlough now? How many are required to come in without pay or come in without pay? What's the demographics look like?
Sure. Like all other executive branch agencies, we have to put together a shutdown plan. So our plan has the president-appointed, Senate-confirmed commissioners are working as principal officers of the United States. We can't be furloughed.
Now, there are four of you right now, one is in the queue.
Exactly, yeah. Right before the last Congress ended on January 2nd, the United States Senate confirmed Michael Cubillanda to a vacant slot on our commission. So we're happy to have him on board. Unfortunately, we are in shutdown mode. In addition to the commissioners, we have a few of our administrative team, the secretary of the commission, and our financial and IT folks to make sure that the assets of the commission are up and running and we don't have any degradation there. Our general counsel is on call. But beyond that, the rest of the agency is all furloughed, and so we've had to suspend our operations.
You had mentioned that the small amount that the Postal Regulatory Commission uses out of the entire postal budget is a tremendous bang for the buck. So what I'm curious, the shutdown of the agency, what impact does it have on postal operations, if any, and actually how do we know that the PRC is not functioning at this time?
The good news is the Postal Service is still delivering the mail. So as their regulator, we obviously aren't the operator, and with their permanent appropriation, the American public are still getting the basic mission of the Postal Service, which is delivery of their mail 6-7 days a week if you're getting your package on Sunday. But in terms of the Postal Service's business operations, we have to approve final authority over the rates they set, the products they offer. Probably one of the most tangible examples of the impact is the Postal Service has hundreds of what are called negotiated service agreements with a lot of their customers, particularly in the very competitive package and parcel market. We have to review those and approve those. The Postal Service's ability, therefore, to enter into these contracts has come to a standstill because we are not adjudicating those contracts that the Postal Service would be waiting for us to approve.
So the Postal Service is hindered in their ability to solicit new partners and new customers of their services because you are sort of, your operations are suspended.
Exactly.
And how do you think that would impact revenue, let's say, over the long haul or over, let's say, the 6 to 9 month period?
Well, hopefully the impasse between Congress and the President will come to a quick resolution. And the couple weeks now that we've been shuttered won't have as great an impact on the Postal Service. But certainly in an extreme scenario, if this goes on for a long time, the ability of the Postal Service to update its contracts or enter into new contracts is frozen in place. So they could potentially be missing opportunities in the marketplace. And that's aside from, you know, as I said, that's just one example. We are in the midst of what's called our annual compliance determination. We're under the law. We have to review all the Postal Service's rates and fees that were in effect the previous year, also review their service performance the last year, and make decisions about whether any of those rates and fees weren't compliant with law or whether service standards weren't met. That whole process is frozen because we're unable to do that very important annual review that we were in the midst of with all our staff being furloughed. So when we get up and running again, I'm sure we'll have to adjust the deadlines in that case to accommodate that. So whether it's annual big reviews that stakeholders look to and rely on, or important things like contracts that the Postal Service relies on for setting rates and getting new business, the work of the commission is frozen at the moment.
Now, the PRC has also been considering its 10-year rate review, and it sort of you issued your findings at the end of last year, but we await a ruling. how does the shutdown affect the timeline of that issuing that ruling to modernize rates or to implement any changes to rate structuring?
Yeah, again, all the operations of the Postal Regulatory Commission have been suspended because pretty much all our staff are on furlough. So until we get up and running again, any of the pending dockets before us, we're at a standstill. And as you indicate, that's one of them, a very important one. The law tasked the commission with, after 10 years of the 2006 law, to look back at the experience of the market dominant price cap system and assess whether it was meeting the 9 objectives of the law, taking account 14 factors, and if not, propose alternatives, which we did in December of 2017, and that started a multi-month comment period, reply comment period. We got those comments in, so our next step in that process would be a further, either a final rule or further proposed rules. All that work is frozen.
So it's safe to say that the government shutdown has impacted the Postal Service's capability of generating revenue and soliciting new business in the interim.
It's certainly, you know, as I'd suggest, in the longer this goes on, that impact can grow. If we limited this to, as I said, it's only been 2 weeks in the case of the commission that we've been shut down, obviously that impact is a bit more. But look, at the end of the day, that's our mission, is transparency and accountability of the Postal Service and ensuring a vital and efficient universal mail system, which means we've got final authority over the rates they set, the products they offer, looking out at fair competition issues, service standards. So all those things, once you start talking about rates, products, the ability of the Postal Service to move out in those areas are frozen until we can get up and running again here at the Commission.
One of the last items that the Postal Regulatory Commission took up before the government shutdown was a ruling affecting the allocation of institutional costs or overhead costs of the Postal Service. And that captured the attention of a lot of folks because of the president's position on the Amazon negotiated service agreement. The president claimed that the Amazon was somehow getting a sweet deal and that its sweet deal was actually negatively impacting the financial stability of the Postal Service. The PRC issued a ruling. I'm curious to see how and the ruling, although increased the institutional costs allocated to competitive products, it wasn't by the magnitude desired, I think, by folks who thought the Postal Service was significantly underpricing certain products. How did you navigate the politics of that dispute?
Well, I would separate the president's concerns on the pricing of the Postal Service's arrangements with Amazon from the case you're referencing. I do look at those as two separate matters. And the president did create, through executive order, a task force that the Secretary of Treasury led last year, and they came out, and obviously the membership of the supervisors know of the task force report that looked at a variety of issues, including postal pricing, and had some recommendations there. The case that was before us is one related to the Postal Service's competitive products. In essence, all Postal Service products are regulated as market dominant, which are under the price cap, and the idea is self-evident there. If they're a market dominant product, they're captive customers, if you will. And then competitive products, which by their nature are open to competition in the marketplace. So we're obviously talking a lot about packages and parcels. And under the law, competitive products really have to meet three simple tests, which is they can't be subsidized by market dominant products. They have to stand on their own, and at least every one of those products have to cover their cost. And then the last test is collectively, there's a floor that the Postal Service has to kick into the institutional costs, or as you said, the overhead costs of the Postal Service, to ensure that they are paying what's perceived as at least a fair share. And the commission has to review that once every 5 years. Its first review, it set it up at 5.5%. It kept it that way in 2012. We started the second review actually in November of 2016. I went through an extensive comment period, an advance notice of proposed rulemaking, and then put out for comment a proposed rule, and in fact even then put out for comment a further proposed rule. We finalized that rule just a few weeks ago at the beginning of this month. And what we did was change from a static number and created a formula, which we feel is more reflective of the actual market conditions in the competitive landscape that the Postal Service and its competitors are operating under, and hence better reflects what's going on a annual basis, so that we don't have one number that's stuck in time. So as you said, the result of that is the formula increased that number from 5.5. It's getting close to 10. It'll adjust each year. The Postal Service in its most recent year has contributed actually well above 20%. So again, this is a floor. It's not a ceiling. And the case itself, like everything we do here at the Commission, was on the record in the open light of day. So we had a lot of good substantive interaction. Folks who were arguing that actually we should get rid of the requirement altogether. The marketplace is competitive enough. We had others who suggested just leave it at the 5.5. And then we had a lot of other folks give us comments that said we should take an approach to actually look at increasing it considerably. So we weighed all that. Our order, final order, was about 200 pages, which really went through the very competitive marketplace and outlined how and why we came up with this formula. Right.
Last area I want to explore with you is, and I know you've spoken a number of times about the universal service obligation, and a lot of other folks, and that is of concern to postal employees and postal customers, particularly those in postal-reliant communities. Now, you worked for John McHugh, who was chairman of the Postal Subcommittee a number of years ago, and he represented an extraordinarily rural New York district. So universal service obligation is very meaningful to you and to the former chairman of the committee, as well as many United States senators and members of Congress. The universal service obligation, as I understand it right now, is, as I would say, operationally defined. That it's never really been statutorily defined what it means. What it, you know, does it mean 6-day delivery? Does it mean door delivery? Now you've spoken in the past on this. Do you think it should be statutorily defined, or should there be some administrative definition of it that's more fleshed out? And if so, how? How do we do it?
Yeah, it's very important for the clarity of mission for the United States Postal Service and this national treasure that we have, which is the United States Postal Service, that we're clear as to what is it that we as Americans expect of the United States Postal Service. You know, because quite frankly, why else is it a government institution? Well, it's a government institution, as you said, to provide universal service to the American public. And as you indicated, I had the honor of working with John McHugh. Actually, I was born and raised in that same rural area in northern New York. And a lot of these communities may not have had much, but what they did have, in almost every case, was a post office. And they had that reliance in rural America to get, whether it's letters, packages, and parcels delivered and connect to that wider universe. So you're right on. I well appreciate the importance of that. And so what I worry is in the United States right now, we have not given the Postal Service that clarity of what is the scope of the universal service obligation. And most importantly, how do we ensure that that remains funded, self-funded? We at the Commission annually estimate the costs of universal service as best as we can tease out from the various attributes. We did a study by law 11 years ago that looked at the universal service obligation, and we came up with it as best we could a definition of it. Current estimates say it's well over $4 billion a year is our estimate is the cost of providing universal service on an annual basis. basis. So my concern is, with all the financial challenges the Postal Service faces and the trend lines we see in first-class mail declines, how do we make sure that the Postal Service gets its mission done of delivering the mail, but also gets the revenue it needs to maintain universal service? And so I think we've got to have that discussion now, whether it's Congress that mandates it. You know, I think we've got an example that worked in 1996. Congress passed the Telecommunications Act of 1996. That was right at the time as the internet as we know it today was really taking off. And one piece of that was mandating that the Federal Communications Commission define universal service in the telecommunications arena under a variety of guidelines and criteria that Congress put in place. So that could be one option where you would see Congress taking a page from the FCC approach in the 96 Telecom Act and maybe looking to the Postal Regulatory Commission as that expert body to, by regulation, say, hey, take into account, like you could imagine, take account the needs of rural America, of contiguous areas, ensuring access, so on and so forth. We could come up with a definition that would make sure we got some clarity. Because right now, you and I can each have our own definition of universal service. It can be as big or small. And under the very 50,000-foot descriptors that are in law right now, we'd both be right. But both of those have very different price tags. And with the Postal Service's financial challenges, without that clarity of mission, they're always, to me, going to be in this situation where folks believe they should be doing a lot more or a lot less, and we just need to get that settled so they know what their mission is to the American public.
Is it, and let me do this final question, is should the universal service obligation be defined by what we can afford or what we need?
I think we want to be clear as what we as an American public expect and need from the Postal Service, but we can't be blind to the fact of what is that price tag as well. And that could then potentially require we have to look at trade-offs of, you know, how much various criteria do you have, what's the cost of that. Right now we don't even have a good handle as to what is that scale and scope of operations. As I said, best that we can estimate here at the Commission, that's a $4 billion bogey in increasing each year. And we want to make sure, that, as I said, this national treasure that we have come and rely and expect on has that clarity of mission.
Interestingly, in the original Postal Reorganization Act, there was a specific appropriation, for a public service appropriation, which funded, among other things, the small and rural post offices of around $450 to $500 million, the last I recall, that before it sort of sunset. But anyway, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you, Chairman Tapp, for spending some time with us on in a deserted Postal Regulatory Commission office building. But I'm glad that the commissioners are still performing their role and that the your dedicated staff are eagerly awaiting their ability to return to the job.
Yeah, I can't wait to have them back. Good to spend some time with you, Bob, and also a nice way to communicate with all our friends within the supervisors.
Thanks a lot, Robert.
I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came.